The Blue Water Chamber of Commerce hosts a variety of networking events, connecting their members with leads, referrals, and people they can do business with. See what's happening at the Chamber and how they can help your business grow at bluewaterchamber.com.
And good Monday morning, 1380 WPHM, on air, AM 1380, online at WPHM.net. Next segment might sound a little bit inside baseball, and you wouldn't be wrong in assuming so. But if you're listening to us over the air, or even if you're listening to us online, some of the implications that our next guest is going to talk about could really impact your listening experience to 1380 WPHM. I want to welcome in the editor and publisher of Northeast Radio Watch, Scott Feibusch. Scott, welcome back to WPHM.
Hi, Caleb. Great to be back with you.
Yeah, great to have you here. I know you've been a visitor in our studios before, popped in a few years back, and you travel all around the country checking out different broadcast installations, don't you?
I do, not just checking out, but working with them on things like signal improvement, buying and selling signals, all that good stuff. So I know a good, well-run local radio station when I see one, and you're sitting in one right now.
Yeah, I appreciate you making some time for us too today, Scott. And the big headline, the big news here in the past few weeks when it comes to broadcast radio, and I'm sure you've written about it on northeastradiowatch.com, is the decision that was made by Ford, based out of Michigan, one of our nice local Michigan companies here, making the decision to no longer put AM radios in most of their new vehicles. Did this catch you off guard, Scott, or were you kind of seeing this coming?
I think the scale and the timing caught a lot of people off guard, not so much the decision itself. I mean, you know, let's be realistic about it. AM radio as a technology has been around for over 100 years now. And how many other technological media do we use that are 100 years old? You can't, you know, unless you're an antique collector, you can't really play your great-grandfather's gramophone records anymore or cylinders. We're not sending telegraphs. So, I mean, there's a realization that AM, as we know it, is probably on the long side of its lifespan. But to go this quickly when there are still stations that people depend upon that are largely AM only, and to have that decision coming from a U.S. company the size of Ford is a surprise. We know we've seen it from some European automakers because AM, or medium wave as they would say, is largely dead in most of continental Europe. We know that a lot of electric car manufacturers, because they don't want to go to the extra expense of cleaning up some of their battery charging systems to make sure they're not creating electrical interference to AM radio, we know they've been phasing AM out. But to have a company the size of Ford saying, wait, we're going to do this, we're going to do it next year, that was an eye-opener for sure.
Some of those things are definitely true as far as the interference from electric vehicles. Is there a way that automakers could prevent that? I know it's being used as a scapegoat for a lot of these automakers, but you can do it.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question that you can create an electrical system that is more free of noise and that, by the way, complies better with a little FCC requirement called Part 15 that is supposed to reduce the amount of electrical noise that any device puts out that would interfere. The problem is doing it would add, you know, depending on who you ask, anywhere from $3 to $5 to $10 to the cost of a car. And that may not be a big deal for one single vehicle, but if you multiply it times a production run of several million vehicles, you're starting to get into what an automaker would look at as real money. And many of them are looking now and sort of at least making the assumption that they could get rid of this in most cars, and most of their customer base wouldn't notice or object. And we're going to find out, I think, pretty quickly whether or not that's true.
Ford came out basically and said, hey, if you want to listen to your favorite AM radio station, you could still, you know, listen online. We have a mobile app. You could sync your app up to your car, have it, you know, play through your phone and through your car's infotainment system. Is that kind of the way things are going down with these automakers here, Scott? And if so, could eliminating the FM band also not be too far away?
that is something a lot of people are worried about. I mean, yeah, realistically, you know, a lot of people, myself very much included, consume a lot of what they listen to in their cars now through some sort of connection to your phone. And that gets interesting, too, because there are so many different ways of doing it. We've seen in the last few years where, you know, depending on which kind of phone you have, either Apple CarPlay or Android Auto have become, if not universal, at least pretty widely adopted. Except here's the thing, the automakers aren't thrilled about that either, because one big thing that they look at with the dashboard now is we're generating all of this data that's valuable to somebody about what people are listening to, where they are when they're listening to it, who's in the car when they're doing it. And if that's all going through Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, that data belongs to Google or it belongs to Apple. It doesn't belong to Ford or GM or Honda or whoever. And so one of the counter pushbacks here, I guess you could say, is that some automakers are looking and saying, why don't we make this something proprietary to us where we will control this data? Great potentially if you're the automaker trying to find some ways to make some money off of it. Not so great if you are somebody who, let's say, rents cars pretty frequently and wants to have a uniform interface that you know works, depending on, you know, regardless of which kind of car you're getting into. And so we're at the point now where government regulators are being pushed to get involved in this. There's a safety issue, too. The emergency alert system that we depend on for important notifications of things like severe weather. We know, obviously, in the Great Lakes, you can get severe weather coming down on you in an instant. A lot of the infrastructure for that that the government pays for through FEMA is all built up through networks of old line AM radio stations. And so FEMA is involved now. I was at the National Association of Broadcasters conference in Las Vegas last month, and there were meetings between, you know, representatives of big AM broadcasters and FEMA and the DOT. And there are actually pushes now to try to get the DOT to say, hey, you know what, AM and FM radio is a safety component that needs to be required in cars just the same way as an airbag or a seatbelt. And it's not a given that they will actually get that regulation through, but it's at least being discussed.
Scott Feibosch is the editor of the Northeast Radio Watch. AM radio is just one of the many things being brought up in Washington, D.C., and I can't really expect the FCC to make any kind of rules on that, because my understanding at the moment is it's pretty much gridlock at the commission, with there being an even number of commissioners from both parties.
It sure is. I mean, you think, you know, you look at Congress and you think, wow, they're really deadlocked, split right down the middle right now. It's even worse at the FCC, because the FCC is made up of five commissioners. Traditionally, there are three commissioners from whichever party holds the White House and two minority party commissioners. The problem is that getting commissioners confirmed requires the Senate. President Biden made a nomination for a third Democratic commissioner more than a year ago now, a woman named Gigi Sohn. She was not popular in certain commercial broadcasting circles. She has spoken up pretty heavily against deregulation. And as a result, she was never able to get that 50th Senate vote to get confirmation through in the Senate. And after that nomination lingered for over a year, it was withdrawn about a month ago. And so far, no replacement nomination has come out of the White House. And so right now there are two votes on each side of just about any issue in the FCC, and when you're deadlocked 2-2, nothing can advance.
What are some of the reasons that are being given for not confirming? Is it purely because of politics, or is it because of, you know, net neutrality or any of these other hot-button issues that seem to have come up during the last administration's commission?
Her nomination had a lot of opponents for a lot of reasons. I mean, it was a pretty activist nomination in a commission that has been known for not being super activist in the past. But there are a lot of issues as a result that are simply, you know, the FCC just cannot move forward on them. And so those are big issues, like, for instance, how many TV stations a single company is allowed to own. There are a lot of broadcasters that are pushing to loosen up those restrictions and let single companies own more than, right now it's 39%. Of viewing households in the U.S. That's held up right now. Any of this action on AM radio is held up right now. A lot of questions about whether filing windows can open up to try to get some new stations squeezed onto the dial. in different places, and all of this is just sitting and waiting. I met with a lot of lawyers when I was at the NAB show in Las Vegas, and everybody says, we're just telling our clients there's nothing you can do. You just have to sit and wait for something to happen. And a lot of these nominations, you know, in a very busy White House, the FCC is not always the top priority, and nobody seems to think there's going to be any super immediate nomination coming out, and then we're heading into another election year before you know it.
Yep, absolutely. Scott Feibusch from Northeast Radio Watch, he's the editor there. You can read all about stuff going on mostly in New England area, but you cover a lot of other FCC and issues that impact all of us broadcasters. So that's definitely, if you're a bit of a broadcasting nerd, you want to check out Northeast Radio Watch. And also check out Feibusch.com, because if you want to see pictures of this radio station's interior as well as transmitter sites and photos of studios all across the country, you've got those up on your website.
I sure do, and I've got my podcast going again. It took a little bit of a hiatus for a while, but it's back, the Top of the Tower podcast, talking to all sorts of interesting radio people from across the country and sometimes around the world, and that's at Feibusch.com too.
Absolutely, Scott. I guess one final thought, you brought up ATSC 3.0, and that was a hot topic when I was at the NAB show 5 years ago. And it was, hey, this is coming. It's going to revolutionize broadcast television. It's going to be in your car. It's going to be everywhere. It's going to be a lot more portable. What happened to that? Are we just waiting on equipment manufacturers, or are we waiting for this to become more practical, more applicable? What's the holdup at this point?
It is on the air now in most large markets. I'm pretty sure Detroit
we do have
has
one.
A signal that's on yeah. now. We just got one a couple months ago here in Rochester, New York, where I'm based at the other end of the Great Lakes. Higher-end TVs, if you go into the store now and you look for that next-gen or ATSC 3.0 logo, you will see it on probably 20 to 30% of the higher-end TVs that you can buy right now. And the hope is, by the end of this year and into next year, that it'll be nearly all TVs. But if you're not using an antenna, you don't really get any of those benefits yet. None of that is transmitted through cable or satellites, especially somewhere like Port Huron, where you're kind of right at the edge of the over-the-air range for Detroit signals, unless you fancy the challenge of putting a big antenna up on your roof. You may not be in a great position to benefit from that just yet. There's a lot of talk about being able to put up booster signals at the fringes of markets. So eventually you could see the Detroit stations put up another set of transmitters that might serve Port Huron in vicinity, and that would be kind of cool, or maybe coming the other direction from Flint and Bay City and over that way. But yeah, right now you sort of have to be in one of the markets where that signal is on, and even then the benefits are only sort of there. You're still not really getting anybody yet transmitting the 4K pictures that they're talking about. A lot of the interactive content is still brand new. So we're still in early days on it, I think I would say.
Will we see, Scott, something similar to the digital TV mandate that happened in, what was that, like 08, 09, that mandate?
2009 was the cutover on that. There is no talk of a mandate right now. It is being done as sort of a phased transition. Stations are not being given new spectrum, and so they have to work out deals to share with each other. So one station keeps broadcasting everybody in the existing DTV standard, and the other one broadcasts in this new 3.0 standard. And again, people are looking to the FCC for some clarification of when a broader switchover might happen. And again, until we have an FCC that can vote 3-2 on something, we're not going to get that yet.
On that ominous note, we will leave it. Scott Feibusch, editor of Northeast Radio Watch, talking all things media, broadcasting, FCC, and more. Again, we'll check you out online. Appreciate your time here on WPHM, and look forward to seeing you in person real soon, Scott.
Always happy to be a ray of sunshine for you, Caleb.
And this is Caleb Gordon. I'm filling in for Paul Miller. You're listening to 1380 WPHM.